AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. Today is the day that ag is put in the spotlight around the country. Farm equipment is on the National Mall in D.C. Social media is full of messages and shout-outs to farmers about National Ag Day. So, even though we celebrate and talk about agriculture every day, here's a big happy National Ag Day from AgriTalk.
Live from beneath a welcome March shower via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. It's in the name, Chip. It's right in there. It's like the first two letters. This morning we begin with a conversation with Stephanie Stilo Dickerson from Grit to Grace, Grit with Grace. Then it's Dr. Ernie Goss from The Creighton University. Right after the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much, buddy. How's things going? Yeah, National Ag Day. Pat yourself on the back out there, and then let's get back to work, right?
I'm feeling very smug and, smug and self-satisfied today. I think I've sort of chronicled my efforts to, put the house together.
Oh, yeah.
Just work on the yard. A lot of stuff. And yesterday I got done with work and there were just a couple of things. And I thought, you know what would really set off these little projects is if I got them done in time for this rain to roll through.
Right.
The rain falls on it. And now it doesn't look like, ooh, he's done something new. It's just like, ooh, doesn't it look lovely? I'm very,
beautiful.
Very self-satisfied today. Yes.
I love
yes.
that. You the yard smartness. Farmer, you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, it's my part to sort of participate in National Ag Day, you know?
Oh, good.
I've got my own personal ag sphere put together here.
Ag sphere. You know, I've got that too. I've got that too. As a matter of fact, you know, one thing that happens every spring when the snow is completely gone and I go for walks out in the timber. I'm shed hunting is what I'm doing. All of a sudden you realize, geez, I really need to clean this brush pile up. Wow. That needs to get cleaned up too. You know? Yep. Yeah. So even though I'm the only one that really sees it, I've identified and marked a few projects out there in the timber that need to cleaned up. Yeah. Plus
there's some of that
stuff out there that's growing that you just don't want. So, that's going to get taken care of yet this spring, too. No question about it. No question.
We got a big show this morning, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Wait until you hear this story from Stephanie Stilo Dickerson out in Paradise, Kansas, Bar S Ranch. You guys, it is bone chilling. It is absolutely bone chilling. But we'll get all the details from Stephanie coming up here in a little bit. And, of course, we've got Ernie Goss from Creighton University coming up later in the show. Talk about his rural Main Street Index and how the rural economy is doing. So, all right. Let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Very good. Well, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said the central bank is prepared to raise interest rates by a half percentage point at its next meeting if needed. Policymakers raised the benchmark lending rate by a quarter point at their meeting last week and signaled six more hikes, Chip, of that magnitude this year based on the median projection.
Wow.
Powell indicated that half-point hikes may be on the table when policymakers next gather. That's on May 3rd and 4th and at subsequent sessions. Getting a little aggressive with the increased rate hikes.
Yeah, and, well, not yet. Just saying that they're going to get a little bit more aggressive. Hasn't happened yet. We talked about this before last week's rate increase, that with the amount of activity, economic activity that we're seeing out there and the inflation rate that we are dealing with, maybe be a little bit more aggressive than a quarter point. Well, that's the conversation that they're having now.
Canadian Pacific Railway and the union representing its conductors and engineers agreed to shift stalled contract negotiations to binding arbitration, freeing it to resume freight shipments after a two-day work stoppage. A statement indicates the work stoppage that started to open the week is over, which will bring relief to many in the ag industry who had grown increasingly concerned about the impacts to grain, fertilizer, and other shipments that take place via rail. Little progress there.
There are enough challenges getting product where it needs to be, when it needs to be there this spring. We don't need another, CP railway workers on strike. Now, it doesn't mean immediate relief and a complete fix for some of the supply chain issues out there, but it's going to help.
Well, the battle for Ukraine's strategic port of Mariupol continues as Ukraine rejected a Russian offer to evacuate its troops from the besieged city. Volodymyr Zelensky, the Ukrainian president, said that any compromises with Russia to end the war would have to be confirmed via nationwide referendum.
Wow.
Dude.
Wow. Yeah, it's the people's. He's turned it into the people's war, the Ukrainian people's war, and it is the people's decision on what is going to happen going forward.
Well, I think that's a. That's a good decision. It's a good spot for him to be. It's a savvy political move, I would say.
It may be, but it takes a long time to do that kind of stuff, too.
Well, that's the other thing.
Yep,
the European
yep.
Union will, for the first time, tap an agricultural crisis fund to cushion the impact of the ongoing war in Ukraine on food producers facing high energy prices and shortages of some key products. Chip, this would this compare to tapping CCC funds here in the U.S., or what do you make of this one?
Well, you know, that's probably, that's a great question, and I think it probably would, because the CCC funds are designed to help get through, periods get past some of the headwinds that farmers
right.
face. I think it does. I think it does compare
yep.
very well there. But since this is the first time that they're tapping it, it's going to be interesting
right.
to see how it all plays out.
Well, Chip, Republicans complain they continue to wait on an accounting they're seeking regarding the White House's request for more COVID-19 funding. Senate Appropriations Vice Chairman Richard Shelby said he wants details on how much previously appropriated money remains unspent. And you're going to like this one. A hearing scheduled for April 27, we talked about this yesterday, on the meatpacking industry announced by House Ag Committee Chair David Scott has revealed another friction point with the panel's ranking member, G.T. Thompson, with Scott noting, quote, it is critical that we find out if industry concentration and anti-competitive behavior are playing a role in inflating prices for consumers. Thompson retorted, quote, unfortunately, this hearing has the appearance of a political charade designed to further this administration's narrative of blaming industry executives instead of the Democratic Party's own reckless spending for skyrocketing inflation.
Yeah.
Shots
well,
fired.
Yeah. The other thing that what I understand is that Representative Thompson was not consulted in whether or not this hearing should be held.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's pushing back some on this.
He's a little sore.
Yeah, he is. Absolutely.
Well, in a related note, Nebraska cattlemen plan to build their own butchering plant to bypass America's meat processing plants, which they say underpay for livestock even as inflation drives up food prices. Chip.
All right. Thank you so much, Davis. We are going to celebrate National Ag Day in the next segment. Grit with Grace. We're heading out to Paradise, Kansas. Learn what happened at the Bar S Ranch back in December. That's coming up next, right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by new Bond Silage Speed C, aerobically stable corn silage in 14 days. Learn more at bondsilageusa.com/speed. It's fast.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
AgriTalk is brought to you by new Bond Silage Speed C, aerobically stable corn silage in 14 days. Learn more at bondsilageusa.com/speed. It's fast.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you are with us. Okay, Grit with Grace is a series that we are running on U.S. Farm Report, hosted by Tyne Morgan. And we will sometimes feature one of the Zoetis-sponsored stories right here on AgriTalk, which is what we're doing right now on Ag Day 2022. Joining us is Stephanie Stylo Dickerson from the Bar S Ranch in Paradise, Kansas. Stephanie, welcome to AgriTalk. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Stephanie, I don't know how else to describe this story, because it is absolutely bone chilling what you went through. You were caught in a prairie fire back in December, I believe it was. It's kind of set the stage for what happened. Before the fire hit your ranch, what was the day like? What was the weather doing?
The day of the fire, my husband and I, it was an abnormally warm day for December. I think it was about 65 degrees that day. And in the morning, it was just kind of eerie out. The wind had started to pick up, but you can kind of, I mean, I guess being a farmer rancher my entire life, you can just kind of feel when there's going to be some weather event for the day or whatever. And that morning it was eerie out. And then as the day progressed, by about noon, the winds were really starting to pick up. And I told my husband over lunch, I said, man, I hope we don't have a fire today, because it's going to be really bad.
Yeah, well, it's unbelievably dry out your way. And when you get the winds blowing like that, it's danger time for sure. So how and where did the fire start, Stephanie? How far away from the ranch was it when it started?
So we have now found out that there were actually four different fires that all started at different places. The one that was closest to our ranch was about 8 miles west of us. But then all four of those kind of converged. And when the wind shifted around, the wind started out of the south that day. And then as the day progressed, it then shifted to the west and then to the northwest. And when it shifted to the northwest, was when the fire actually came back onto our ranch.
Okay. And it was moving unbelievably fast, wasn't it?
Yeah. So there were winds. We had sustained winds of 80 mile per hour and gusts of over 120 is what they clocked in Russell.
Holy mackerel. That can move a fire 10 miles in no time at all.
Yeah, we were told that from Highway 183, which is the highway that runs north out of Hayes, to Highway 281, which runs north out of Russell, is about 30 miles, that it moved from Highway 83 to 281 in 18 minutes.
18 minutes? That doesn't leave you any time to get anything out of the way. What did you do first?
Well, so actually, my husband and I were not even at our ranch at the time. We had gotten a phone call from neighbors of ours about 2:30 in the afternoon to come over and help them evacuate their horses. They were actually in the direct line of the first fire that started 8 miles from us. So we had actually headed over there to help them. So we weren't even at the ranch, but we didn't end up saving their horses. We ended up actually wrecking two vehicles with trailers. It was
got blown over, right?
We did. My husband and my youngest son actually were in a truck and trailer that got blown over, and then I was pulling another trailer, and the trailer that I was pulling blew off. The only good thing was is that the vehicle that I was in was still running so that we could actually attempt to escape the fire. And then that's when we actually sat in the field with the firefighters.
Okay. All right. So when did you realize that you were caught in this thing?
About the time that the trailer flipped, that's when I kind of knew that we were in big trouble. And then when we took off to try to go back to the house, that's when we ran into the first wall of fire. And when we turned around, then there was fire behind us too. So there was fire in front of us and behind us. And that's, then I ended up driving through that. And
When did you hook up with the volunteer firemen?
So after we drove through that first initial wall of fire, we got back to where the truck and trailer had flipped over. And that's when we met our neighbors who were the volunteer firefighters. And they were checking the vehicle to see if anybody was in it. And so we stopped. We realized that it was our neighbors. And we told them nobody was in the vehicle. And that's when they told us to follow them.
Okay. Now, this is, boy, this is, it's got to be difficult to talk about this part, but tell us how you survived it. This is astonishing to me.
So when we hooked up with the firefighters, we thought that we could go back initially to our friend's house because we thought maybe the fire was already past there. That's when we figured out that there were more fires coming. So they made us evacuate out of their house as well. And that's when the firefighters told us to, follow them to the wheat field because it was green and it had the least amount of fuel for the fire. And basically us two small rural firefighting like pickup and a tanker truck sat in the middle of a wheat field, and they told us to pull. We pulled up as close as possible to each other's vehicles, and then they told us that as the fire got closer, they were going to wait because they didn't know how much water was left in the tanker.
Right.
And they waited until the fire got about 20 feet from the vehicles, and then that's when they sprayed us with water.
Wow. I cannot even imagine. Stephanie, when did you realize that the ranch got hit too?
So after the fire went over us in the field, we went back to our neighbor's house, checked on them. They had lost their barn at that point. Their house was still there. We told them the firefighters were still there with them. So we told them that we needed to get back to our ranch because at that point we had realized that the wind had shifted and was coming out of the northwest. And I told my husband, I said, we need to get back to the ranch. So it took us probably about 45 minutes to make it back there just because of down power lines, fires still, blowing through and stuff like that. And we got about 2 miles from our house, and there's a couple of wheat fields right before you get to our house from the south. And from 2 miles, I could see flames coming out of our house and our barns.
Oh, my gosh. So it lost all the buildings, right?
Yeah. There's one metal shop building that didn't burn at David and I's house, but everything. We lost three calving barns and then, like, our show barn for, like, our kids' show calves and our house.
And I know you lost some cattle too, but the amazing thing is that you were able to relocate some of your animals and get them off site and get them in the care of some good people, right?
Absolutely. Right now our cows are in 10 different locations in 2 different states. So that kind of makes it a little challenging to try to get to everything, but the generosity of friends, neighbors, it's been amazing.
Yeah, and you got a pile of hay sitting there now. That's good news.
We do. The day after the fire, it's almost indescribable how much hay donations, food, clothing, I mean, just people coming to help clean up, generators. We were without electricity and water for 4 days. So we had people bring generators. We had our local fire crew that helped us get through the fire. We're bringing their tanker trucks out, helping us fill water tanks or whatever, because we didn't have our rural water line had busted. And so there was no water.
Right. Right. Stephanie, we've only got about 30 seconds left, but I got to ask, how's the family doing? How are you guys dealing with it's got to be sensory overload that you're experiencing from all of this.
We're doing all right.
Good.
Ranchers and farmers we're resilient, and we're bouncing back. We're in rebuild mode right now, and so we're cleaning up and rebuilding and putting fences back and trying to get things all ready for hopefully a green summer.
Stephanie, God bless you. Thank God you're still here, and thank God that you've got your family with you. Thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you so much for having me on, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet. That's Stephanie Stilo Dickerson. She is with the Bart S. Ranch out in Paradise, Kansas. We'll be right back. Wow.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, backing off of the highs that were put in overnight, right?
Yeah, you know, strong gains overnight on follow-through, especially in the wheat market. But we back down now with nearby contracts in SRW, HRW, and spring wheat futures all trading to the downside. So, some profit taking and holding within those recent choppy trading ranges. So probably not too much of a surprise, I guess. The market has this pattern of up one day, down the next, and we're kind of seeing that play out right now.
Yep. Yeah, the pattern is clearly in place. And right now, the fundamentals of the market aren't changing that much, but the money continues to flow through the system, right?
Absolutely. So, you know, you got the global supply concerns because of the Russia-Ukraine situation. And domestically here, the Southern Plains are getting some precip and things like that. Yeah. So, you know, I guess there is technically a fundamental reason, but most of it's just money flow, like you mentioned.
That's right. That's a great point. Can't ignore the moisture that HRW country is getting right now. A little bit of pressure on nearby corn is helping the feeder cattle market out a touch.
Yeah, so feeders, like you said, trading to the upside, as are live cattle futures. And probably not too much of a surprise there. We saw limited buyer interest yesterday in live cattle. The anticipation is that we will see firmer cash cattle prices again this week, but that's probably going to be pushed deep into the week because of the cattle on feed report, and it might not come until after that report on Friday afternoon. So we got a long wait ahead of us and likely some choppy trade. And then hogs, the explosive move to the upside yesterday didn't produce follow-through, and we're facing some corrective selling this morning.
Thanks, Brian. We'll talk to you this afternoon on AgriTalk. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you are here. Davis, what a story from Stephanie. What an experience. It just is, I cannot imagine having to go through something like that. It's shocking.
Yes, to face down the power of the natural forces that we inhabit. I mean, it can make you feel small, and it was a great story and just a great reminder, you know, of what can happen.
Yeah, that's right. Agweb.com. Go check it out. There's a link there at the story at agweb.com to Tyne's report. She's got obviously has some video of what was happening that day. So it's bone chilling, to say the least. Okay, let's get to a conversation right now with Ernie Goss. Ernie is a PhD, Jack A. McAllister Chair of Regional Economics at Creighton University's Hyder College of Business. Ernie, it's been too long. How are you?
Oh, good, Chip. Good to be with you.
I'm glad you're here. Glad you're here. Let's talk about the Rural Main Street Index. And just a reminder to everybody, the index ranges from 0 to 100, reading of 50, representing growth neutral on it. We've got the results for March came in last week. What'd you learn?
Well, the index rose, and it was a nice reading. Of course, these are bank CEOs in rural areas of 10 states, rose to 65.4, and that's a very solid, and I will call it even a healthy number, up from last month. So things are looking good. 4 out of 10 of the bankers expect 2022 net farm income to be above 2021. Net farm income. So it was a good survey. There were some clouds surrounding the survey.
Okay. So 4 out of 10. And isn't it another 4 out of 10 basically expect net farm income to be steady with year ago?
That's right. And given what's going on now, that's not so bad. I have to say, looking, if anybody can get any visibility here, you got to get in the mind of Vladimir Putin, and who wants to be there, you know?
Right. That's right. That's right, sir. But generally speaking, the bankers are fairly optimistic about the real economy, right?
They are. In other words, the confidence index, we ask them to look out 6 months, and they're pretty positive. They're positive, very positive on, of course, commodity prices. That would be grain and livestock. Of course, they're not quite as positive on costs. Of course, costs, they expect costs to rise dramatically, but they expect revenues to rise even more dramatically. So we'll have to wait and see on that, of course. And a lot of that depends on what happens in China, whatever their threats on Taiwan, and what happens, of course, in Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Right. Ernie, was there anything in the survey with the bankers that indicated how much their loan activity? I'm thinking about the input cost that you just mentioned. Our expectations are that the borrowing requirements for farmers are going to be up quite a bit this spring.
It was up, and our index for loan activity was up to 61.9. Again, this is from 0 to 100, so that's well above growth neutral. It was up significantly from last month and even up from March of 2021. So loan activity has increased. But I have to say, even with that, in my judgment, I think the banker's judgment, the farmers are remaining pretty good cash positions, financial positions, and the banks have not over-lended or gotten too far out on that financial limb.
They're going to continue to watch that and make sure that doesn't happen, aren't they, Ernie? I mean, with the amount of inflation that we've got in the system right now, I can't imagine that the banks would allow themselves to become overextended.
That's right. And with interest rates rising, and yesterday, last week, the Fed increased short-term interest rates by 0.5%, 0.25%. And yesterday, of course, Jay Powell, head of the Federal Reserve, said, hey, we're going to raise them even more. And I think the market says, I look at them, they're whistling past the graveyard. He said 50 basis points. That's what I heard him say. He didn't say it explicitly, but higher interest rates, we're probably going to see short-term interest rates by another 1.5% by the end of the year. as much as 2% by the end of next year, which would be 2023.
You know, the gas prices, fuel prices, that has such a big impact on rural America because we got to drive to get anywhere to get anything. Is the energy component of the inflation story the toughest thing to deal with in rural America?
Absolutely. Of course, we're talking about big users, and particularly in this part of the country. I'm in midsection country where we're big users of energy and oil products and petroleum. And, of course, natural gas is also a big user of that, and that goes into fertilizer. So that's a very, very important component. Now, there are other parts of it that are also positive. On the food side, food prices are skyrocketing is a little too strong, but certainly up significantly. Yeah. And then we're talking about agricultural equipment sales prices going up also. So there are some negatives, but they're more positives than negatives.
Okay. Ernie, I want to circle back to the lending just a little bit. Are the bankers getting a little bit more selective on who they're lending money to at this point?
They are somewhat, but they're still lending about at the same pace, or actually in the pace is up from this time last year. So I think both the bankers and the farmers have gotten more selective. I mean, farmers and bankers have long memories, and they remember the 1980s, at least some of them, and they remember what happened then when they weren't so selective and the farmers did overextend.
And what is the condition of the rural banking system? Is it in pretty good shape?
It is. Community bankers are doing well, but there's a real, in my judgment, disconnect between the community bankers and the large big banks, J.P. Morgan, for example, and others, that their views versus the community bankers. The community bankers are right there on the ground, and they certainly see it, and they're more in tune with their customers than, in my judgment, than the large big banks that we see lending.
Gotcha. Okay. So how is the rural Main Street doing, Ernie?
It's doing reasonably well, but it's like the rest of America. We're still, in terms of jobs, not back to pre-pandemic levels. We're moving that direction. We're talking about business. Okay. And even with that, Chip, we're still talking about finding and hiring workers, shortages of workers. We're talking about retailers out there on rural Main Street and in the urban areas as well, trying to find workers. And there have been some, there've been retirements, baby boomers moving out of the labor market, not moving back in. We're talking about child care limitations. And finally, COVID-19 is still having some negative impacts on hiring.
Okay. Colorado, Illinois, Iowa, Kansas, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wyoming are the 10 states that you survey. Are there any states or clusters that are seeing more challenges or maybe even outperforming?
Well, Kansas would be, I won't say challenges, but Kansas is one of the less robust rural Main Street economies that we're looking at. And then when you talk about the others, we're talking about Illinois looking pretty darn strong. That's, of course, southern Illinois, where the major agricultural section of that state as well. And then, of course, Minnesota looking pretty good, but down from last month. So all in all, it was a pretty good month for the agricultural sector, the rural Main Street economy.
Okay. We talked about the inputs. We talked about labor issues, rural Main Street. What other challenges that need to be overcome? No, you know what? I don't want to ask that question. I just looked at the clock and I realized how close we're getting. Ernie, what are we going to do about this inflation? We talked about the Fed raising interest rates. Is that enough? Is that enough to get it done?
Well, they're too little too late. They should have been doing it already more than they have done. Should have been a half point, this half percentage point last time. They're going to have to do it even quicker. So, unfortunately, that's going to drive growth down. I hope we don't do a repeat of Volcker back in the 80s.
Yeah, I certainly hope.
When he raised rates and put us into a recession, now it was a needed recession, if there can be such a thing, but he pushed us into a recession. That did slow down and stop inflation, and hasn't been much of a problem since then, really.
Yeah, Ernie, I've been arguing that all we're really doing right now is determining the depth and the length of the recession, not if there's going to be a recession, because it certainly feels like everything that's happened with energy prices in particular is pointing us in that direction.
I'd have to agree with you, Chip. We're certainly moving toward slow to no growth and could be negative growth. Now, we have to wait and see, and that'll depend on what happens in the global economy with China and Russia. But with higher interest rates, long-term interest rates are going to be rising. The 10-year treasury is up. Other mortgage rates are up. But they're still competitive. We've still got low short-term interest rates and low long-term interest rates.
Yep. They're moving up. About 30 seconds. Is that going to take some of the steam out of the farm land prices?
It will. But, you know, we saw that those in some states, and this is comes from the Federal Reserve of Chicago, 30% in Iowa year over year, January of 21 to January of 22, 30% increase in farmland prices. So we're going to see rents rising, cash rents of farmland rising, and that lags behind the overall land prices.
Gotcha. Ernie, it's fun talking with you, sir. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Nice talking to you, Chip.
You bet. That is Ernie Goss from Creighton University. Hey, we got a big game coming up, Ernie. Creighton versus Iowa State on Friday Night Women.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
The 2022 Bracket Busters Challenge presented by Case IH is underway. Who's still in the game? To find out, head to agweb.com/bracket-busters now through April 4th to check the leaderboard. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Your pal, Davis Michelson, here. I want to talk to Chip Flory, but first, before we do that, before we recap today's conversation, let's get to this industry spotlight quick.
Joining us now is Jared Shriver, Senior Vice President of U.S. Cattle and Pork at Zoetis, Inc. Jared, Zoetis recently announced its sponsorship of Folds of Honor. Tell me about that.
So this is something that's very near and dear to not only myself, but my leadership team's heart, and frankly, our entire organization. To honor those who put their lives on the line, Zoetis is supporting the work of the Folds of Honor Foundation. They focus on providing education scholarships to the spouses and children of the U.S. Armed Forces members who have fallen or been injured in the line of duty. And this really aligns with our commitment of nurturing the future and the next generation.
Folds of Honor Foundation, they do some great work. What else impresses you about Folds of Honor?
Well, you know, Folds of Honor was founded in 2007 by Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney. He was an F-16 fighter pilot in the Air Force Reserve and served three tours of duty in Iraq. And when you look at what they've accomplished, they've awarded almost 35,000 scholarships across all 50 states since 2007. So we're very excited about this.
That's excellent. Why did Zoetis decide to support Folds of Honor?
Well, it's really an opportunity for Zoetis to share our values as a company with our customers. And that's what supporting Folds of Honor across the nation really does. Again, when you look at the tradition that we have of investing in grants and scholarships for youth, this ties in with what we like to do, and it resonates very well with our commitment to nurturing the next generation.
Excellent. Jared, where do we go for more information about the sponsorship?
Absolutely. So you can go to zoetisus.com/Folds of Honor. And obviously you can visit with your local sales representative as well.
Excellent, Jared. That's Jared Shriver, Senior VP of U.S. Cattle and Pork at Zoetis, Inc.
Okay, here we go. Here we go. Chip.
Yes.
I got it. I'm sort of reeling from this, from the conversation that we had with Stephanie Stylo Dickerson, Grit with Grace.
Yeah.
Now, we out here in Iowa don't really get the big prairie fires like they do out there. So I'm having a hard time picturing it. I've had pasture fires, and I think about my frame of reference is kind of, you know, you burn the fence lines, you burn the ditches at certain times of the year. Mm-hmm. But when she was talking about, well, there was fire in front of us, we turned around, there was fire behind us, and now you're parked out in the middle of the greenest spot that you can find with firefighters.
Right.
And water.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, the thing that really stuck out to me, she said, once the fire passed over us.
Yeah. I'm sure it did, too. Think
fire
about it.
Passing over us. I can't imagine that, bro.
No. It's a nightmare. It is an absolute nightmare. And for Stephanie to be able to talk about it the way that she does, boy, talk about grit with grace.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. And her family is so thankful for the support that they have received, the donations, the labor that showed up to help, you know, tear out the fire damaged fence and to help start putting up new fence and the moisture. I didn't get to ask her how much moisture they've received, but the moisture that they've got right now, I can't wait to see pictures in 3 weeks, maybe a month.
Yeah,
but I got to believe it's going to be some of the greenest green that there ever was. And
going
to be such a relief.
Absolutely.
Such a relief.
Another aspect of that story which stuck out on National Agriculture People Day today. The story started with her, she and her husband headed over to the neighbors.
Right.
To help them out. And the story ended with friends and neighbors and people from the neighboring communities bringing hay, bringing food and water and clothing. And that's one of the beauty parts of the system of agriculture is those neighbors helping out neighbors.
And it's not just neighbors down the road. These neighbors were, some of them were hundreds of miles away.
These are neighbors in the Mr. Rogers sense of the word. Neighbors.
That's right. That's right. So big kudos to everybody involved in getting the Bar S Ranch back up and ready for recovery, because just getting ready for recovery, they haven't recovered. They're still dealing.
Yep.
But just getting to the point that they're at right now where when the grass does start to come back that they can get the mama cows back.
Right.
And start to feel normal again. I think that's a big plus
for sure. Well, thanks to Mrs. Dickerson for sharing her story with us. And then on to Dr. Ernie Goss. I don't know that I would call it an excessively positive outlook. There were positive aspects of it. What I'm taking away from that conversation is we are definitely not out of the woods yet.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, lots of challenges. Lots of challenges lie ahead. When we talked about what we're going to do to beat back inflation, his line was, well, hopefully we don't have to go the Volcker route. I'm not too sure that we're not going to have to at some point.
Mm-hmm.
The big difference was Volcker was starting from 7-8% and adding a point a month.
Right.
I don't know if we're going to have to see something like that, but I got a comment from a listener. You know, the thing that's going to end the inflation is we need to quit printing money. And, you know, I've described inflation many times. It is the surge in money supply along with a surge in demand. Throw in a bit of scarcity of supply and it becomes unmanageable. Well, yeah, we need to quit adding fuel to that fire that is inflation out there. If we don't do that, the Fed can raise interest rates as much as they want to, and it's not going to slow it down. All right, thank you for listening this morning, this afternoon. Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady right here on AgriTalk.